Fun. Tonight, folks, we the iPad 2 that I've had for, God, I don't even know how many years now, has decharged and is not charging back up very well. So we do not have any song or intro or transitions or anything tonight. So we will just kind of make do and go from there. But, hey, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Geocaching Podcast. And we can jump right into this. It is episode 532, and tonight's episode is Geocaching Streaking, and I'll let you fill in the blank for whatever you want with that, and even a random thought or two or three. So welcome to the Geocaching Podcast. It is May 9th, 2018. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat, with...
Taz427 and...
InfoFerret.
InfoFerret. And you can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 63031-VOICE and find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. Turn sound down. Okay. This episode is sponsored by our good patrons of the Geocaching Podcast. To become a contributing patron, simply click on the Patreon logo or our PayPal logo on our webpage to help keep our podcast going. From all of us at Geocaching Podcast, we thank you. You know, it's not just not quite the same without the sound behind in the background. It's pretty stagnant, I'm thinking.
Yeah, well.
So I did get a email from a local cacher here about the our sound and stuff, and I went and listened to it on YouTube. The MP3 sounds pretty good. Everyone sounds pretty level, but on YouTube here recently, you've been coming in low, and I've been coming in really loud. So I'm not. I think it's Google Hangouts that's doing this, because we sound fine to one another, right?
Right. When we have our stuff going through with the board that I have here in the GeoSnippet Studios, everything's solid, level. Matter of fact, I turned my volume. The reason why I was less is because I didn't want to be too overbearing myself, so I actually turned the volume input on myself down so I would match with you guys. Unfortunately, on Hangouts, when you look at the actual video, because I'm turning it down, it's fine on the recording that I'm doing here, but Google, thank them, does not have a way of adjusting the volume on their end. So that's why sometimes it's going to be low with that, and there's really not too much we can do about it.
And, I apologize for that, and I turned my level down just a little bit today to try to help out some.
Yep. Matter of fact, you could probably turn it down a smidge more, and it's you'll be about even. Because I've got a meter here that I look at on my Zoom. Yeah. There you go.
There we go.
That's good.
It sounds a bit more even to me now.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things. It's a leveling thing. Normally, what would happen back in days past, we would record our audio individually and then take the file, send it to me, and then I'd spend the next 2 hours evening everybody out digitally and then put it in. And that way, that's why the recording sounded so much better. Nowadays, we just run it straight through the board. And unfortunately, with the way technology is and how things move around, sometimes you get these ins and outs of volume. So we apologize for the times that you either get blasted out of your car or can't hear us. That's just unfortunately one of the ways that it goes with it. All right, good stuff. The weather here has been beautiful. I think the oven is about to turn on because I believe tomorrow it starts in the mid-90s. And for the next 10 days even, it's going to be 90-something. So it's summer's here. The wind is still here, so spring is still here. But once that, I think when that 90 degrees comes in, it's going to shut off the breeze, and then everybody's just going to roast.
Yeah, we're about ready to get into those 90s. We're getting the high 80s now, but I think this weekend we're gonna peak up into the 90s.
Yep. The people are starting to gripe. The ones that before where it was so cold out, so chilly and whatnot, and now it's like, oh, it's so hot. Yeah. Before you could always bundle up. Now you can only take off so much and still be able to walk outside.
I was going to say, geocaching streak does not mean that.
Exactly. Not the 70s. But hey.
Well, we're supposed to be getting a belt of rain and cold weather coming through over the weekend. So,
yeah.
No, we're not quite finished with summer yet. I want some more.
Sorry. Our turn. But it's one of those things. So we get a week. Where, I mean, this year, winter lasted a lot longer than spring. The spring, it was like a week and a half, and it went through and went that way, so that it was like really, really cold, hot. And I like the springs where you get a good 6 weeks of, I don't have to worry about the air conditioner or the furnace, and just go that way and just leave it off and enjoy my electrical bill. But, no. They got to have the "we're going to roast you out of your house" kind of thing going on. So yeah.
Now we had a fairly decent amount of springtime here, so yeah. I'm happy for that. So my electric bill's happy for that too.
Yeah, I bet.
Oh no, it was beautiful last week, the weekend we've just had, which was really great because we had a couple of events that sort of needed it to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I actually did some impressive sounding geocaching for once.
Go for it.
Ooh.
Well, first one was drove a couple of hours north of me to go to a postponed from last weekend, fortunately. Terrain 5 Ceto. We were clearing weeds and cutting down, getting rid of unwanted plants on an island in a lake. Hence, you needed a boat to get to it, hence a T5.
Wow.
And because we had the boat, we could then just pop over to the next little island that had a T5 crad on it. So that worked pretty well.
Very nice.
And because we were on a group of us were sort of on a roll of doing weird and strange things, I got up far too early, drove across town to pick up a friend of mine who had long ladders that fitted in just fitted in the car I had. So we drove a couple of hours north. We don't have those little nice collapsing ladders that you can get off Amazon. He had some reasonable step ladders. After we'd done the Ceto, after we'd done the trad, we went, drove about a couple of miles to, in the center of Masterton, there is a tree climbing cache, which was nice and easy until about 2 years back when the council came round and nicely pruned all the branches for the first sort of 10 feet or so.
Ah, maintenance.
Yeah, so it's not been found quite as much since then. So a group of us turned up. The long ladders just reached far enough for one guy to go up and think, I don't like this. I've got vertigo. Come back down again.
Oh, jeez.
My role was to help one of the people providing ballast for the ladder so it wasn't going to move. I have my essential role in this. The 14-year-old apprentice spider monkey was able to get up the ladder, reach the branches and pull himself into it and got the cage. He then didn't like all the creepy crawlies in it that were in it, so he came back down again fairly fast.
Right.
But in a safe, controlled manner. So his dad went up the tree. He could get himself up there, tipped all the creepy crawlies out, signed the log on all our behalf, came back down again. At which point, somebody else who'd been at the sea tour really, 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 really wanted the cache, screeched up in her car and said, can I come in? Yeah, please, 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 don't put the ladders away, I want it. So 14-year-old spider monkey had to climb up the tree yet again, knowing that there weren't any bugs in the container, and signed it on their behalf. At which point, one of the volunteer fire brigade people who was just round the corner came out and sort of said, what the heck are you doing? So he explained, and he had heard of geocaching, thought we were mad, gave us a talk about health and safety.
Well, there you go.
Didn't offer to lend us his ladders. Very inconsiderate, if you
really
ask me. Yeah. So we finally got that one off our unfound list because it had been annoying a lot of us.
Oh, very nice.
And we were on a roll, so we went, and it was more or less on the way back, you know, with a bit of a detour. there was another case that hadn't been found, that had a lot of DNFs, that actually been disabled, but we were still fairly convinced was there. So a group of us went out and grabbed it. And after much, it was basically, I think it was meant to be tucked in amongst tree roots, just down from the edge of an earth bank that was about 40 feet.
Uh-huh.
But there'd obviously been a bit of a landslip. So it wasn't visible from the top, and nobody wanted to get that close just in case they joined the landslip going back down. And we went in from the bottom. A friend of one of the party discovered that the electric fence was actually on, despite there being no cattle in the paddock.
Oh my.
But fortunately, we eventually managed to find this cache that hadn't been found since June 2015. So it was there. It had slid down and was hidden under a lot of undergrowth.
Ah, I was going to say, what was the main factor that you think people weren't finding it? Yeah, that would do it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, how difficult is it to miss a 5-gallon drum?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was big. It was big.
Yeah.
It was a lot of wonder, but we did find it. And then on Sunday, we had an easy one. A couple of people getting a ferry to the South Island had just had a half-hour pop-up event while they were waiting to board. So a group was turned up to that, had an idle decision. Oh, what the heck? What am I going to do? Let's go for a couple of ones on the south coast. And so I was just wearing normal sort of clothes rather than serious caching gear. And so we went on one that's got a bit of a scramble up. For anybody in Wellington, it's called the elevator because there's quite a steep slope up to get up to it. We got up there, and I was in sort of calf-length trousers and trainers. And the guy I was with was in shorts. And the gorse had severely overgrown the area. It really, really... Anybody who's met gorse knows it's spiky.
I was going to say, what's gorse?
Yeah, I had to Google that. And I'll pull an image up here real quick.
All right.
It's spiky.
It's pretty spiky.
And bits break off.
Oh, I hate that.
So I'm not going to show you.
That's pretty.
My legs. It looks like me. My legs look like I've got measles. There's so many spikes.
Oh.
Cut to ribbons on it. But I'm still 4 days later. I'm still picking out gorse splinters.
Ouch.
And that turned out to be a DNF.
Oh.
So we decided we're only going to go back up there with a group of people with full sort of leather gauntlets and full Kevlar body armor because you've got to do any looking around.
Well, shy of the 2-inch spikes, it's a kind of a pretty looking plant.
Yeah, we've got some, or in Texas, we got something that's similar. I'm not sure what it's called, but it's that damn needle thing.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's like when they have 2-inch spikes coming off of them. It's like, ouch. I'm leaving that alone.
Yeah. Cause in the States we've got, I know on the East Coast that we've got these burrs and it's probably about the size of a pea, maybe a little bit bigger, but the spikes on them are super thin and sharp, and they're probably about 1.5-2 inches long, and you can't, there's no way to even pick it up without getting poked because the spikes on them are that, you know, sharp with it. So
and I think everywhere in the U.S. has their own special little burrs that get you in their own special little ways. What I found in Indiana is different than what I found in Texas. It's different than what I found in California, but they're all evil.
Evil stuff. And if you want to know a good way to getting them out of your socks, use a plastic fork. Plastic forks are wonderful. All you do is put them underneath and pop them right out, and you don't have to poke yourself. Yeah,
or throw them in a laundry basket and let your wife deal with
it. Love and kisses.
No, the thing with this is we fought our way up there, got legs got scratched to ribbons. Didn't DNF that one with much swearing. Went and got ones further along the trail, which was good, so it wasn't a totally wasted trip. Came back down and met a couple of Brazilian tourists who are walking up there to look for somewhere to watch the sunset from.
Oh, my.
And we thought, well, one, you're pointing totally the wrong way to watch the sunset. You can get there, but it'd be a, you know, a couple of hours walk.
Right.
But you've got to go up over the headland, round and round. And the guy I was with was wearing tramping boots. I was wearing trainers that have a fairly aggressive grip, so they'll get me up most things. But I was getting comments, are you sure those footwear's up? Yeah, that's fine. The guy that came up there was wearing jandals.
Oh.
To you guys.
Yeah.
We eventually talked them out, said you're probably better off watching it from the beach rather than here because it's going to be interesting. Do you have a torch? Well, I've got my phone torch. getting down that steep track in the dark with your phone torch. I don't envy you.
Yeah, not good.
They saw sense and came back down eventually, but they admitted that perhaps they didn't have the best footwear for going up there.
Well, how many geocachers have you seen in the past where they're going in the heavy woods and literally flip flops, and it's like, I wouldn't advise it.
Yeah, I've seen it out there here and stuff, and tracking through this, they got this very high grass, and it grows up, and this grass here is the one that has the burrs in it, and people tramping around with their thongs or their flip flops, and are you nuts?
Yeah, yeah. People don't think sometimes, but they definitely will learn their lesson with the stories they tell after they get out of whatever situation they've gone in. So,
well, we were sort of mentally comparing descriptions we had of them just in case we had to phone our mom who works for Search and Rescue.
Can we take a picture of you just in case? Wow.
Quite, but it got,
I admit I have geocached in them.
Yep.
But it's been, you know, I'm going somewhere and I stop along the side of the road and and I get into too deep of thickets that I shouldn't have gotten into.
Or the fire ants or the pick your favorite thing to brundle through.
Mm-hmm. I realized at one point I was geocaching in Aussie in sandals and thought perhaps going into the woods at night is probably not the best idea.
No,
not good. All right, let's move on. Please, please, please consider becoming a patron to our show. We'd greatly appreciate it. All you have to do is go to our website at geocachingpodcast.com and click on either our PayPal or our Patreon logos. And if you can spare a couple bucks each month for us, we would greatly appreciate it. It literally helps the show and helps keep things going. And for the folks that are doing that, thank you so much. We do greatly appreciate it. Really kind of a slow week, unless somebody's got some ideas of that. We don't have anything from the GCPC mailbag. So if you have comments, questions, suggestions, anything that you'd like to discuss, ask the host a question, anything that comes to mind, simply email it to gcpcmailbag@gmail.com. And we love hearing from you fine folks. And we've, I have to admit, when Scott's been pushing on that, we've been getting a lot of folks consistently for that, and this is the first time in a while that we haven't actually had somebody. So again, gcpcmailbag@gmail.com. Send us your comments, questions, suggestions. When we get a good topic, because like archived geocaches, things like that, people came out of the woodwork for things like that, and we love it when you guys do that. It's great. From the news, not a whole lot that I could find in cases like that. For the folks that are going to be going to the Giga event in Cincinnati, that is right around the corner for Memorial Day weekend. So,
do I sound slightly jealous?
Huh?
Flying out in 2 weeks.
Are ya? Yep.
Aww. Yep.
Yep.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah,
it's, are you going to be there, Andy?
We have tried every way we can. We simply can't make it. It's just one of those things. I've been itching and wanting to go, and they've been knocking on my door asking, by the way, you might want to get in touch with Joshua or some of the other ones. They've got a couple of things going for the podcasters and the videocasters out there. for getting together on some of it. But yeah, we just unfortunately couldn't do it this year, which is heartbreaker because I have a very sneaky suspicion this is going to be the one and the only gig event in the United States.
It's quite possible.
Yeah, so if you can go, go. It's one of those things.
Well, we're still trying to, the Wellington organizers, now it's something like 304 will attend for the event in October. They'd love it to get mega status, but it's not there yet.
It takes time for stuff. I know the fall fling that they have here in North Carolina, they've been trying to get mega for that for a while, and I think they're that close.
You're only a 100 sock puppet accounts away.
That's right. Exactly.
I'm only involved on the very, very edges. I'm part of the team that's putting together sort of an amazing race type question and answer activity. So I've been involved in that. We've got those together. All sorts of interesting, let's play tourist in our own backyard sort of places to bring people to and have them find out little bits.
Yep. It's good stuff. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. And once you get that going and you can keep the attendance at from year to year, it's an awesome event where you can hit those. Right.
It's tricky because, as I say, I'm only dealing on hearsay because I've never been involved. But there hasn't been the continuity of organizing people from one mega event at one end of New Zealand to the next mega event at the other one.
Right.
And it's moved about locations, so it's had to get the 500 will attends each time.
Yeah.
To get over the groundspeak hurdles. It didn't quite do it last year, which is a shame because the Oamaru event was brilliant.
I've had
a blast there. So Wellington's, from what I've heard, is shaping up to be good, but I'm sort of very much on the bits of gossip and periphery rather than the inner workings.
They kind of do like they do for the German mega events they have there. Sell beer. As long as you got beer there, geocachers will come.
It's going to be held in the RSA, which is Pretend Servicemen's Association, Stroke Cosmopolitan Club. So, I believe there is a bar there.
See? I mean, once you put that out, you will get people coming and going for that. It's awesome.
Yeah.
But we had the same issue here with the United States. If if Geo Woodstock is on the East Coast, then the East Coast people show up. If it's on the West Coast, the East Coast might show up, but some of the West Coast will, and we've got a dead area where the Rockies are that there isn't any, you know, major amount of geocaching with that. Right. So you never get that large, huge group like they should.
Yeah. Well, in a sense, you're lucky because you can get people who'll plan a road trip and
drive for
2 or 3 days to get to it and go back again. And this also happens for the Aussies as well.
Yeah.
People will book a flight if it's got that mega label. People won't book a flight if it's, hey, it's in the, they won't even necessarily know it's there if it hasn't got the mega label.
Yeah.
And bear in mind that it's May now and we're looking at, for us, for October, it's getting to, you know, people plan their annual leave, people book their flights. So people will get on a plane for a mega, but they won't for an event.
Yeah.
So Australia and ourselves can't really run it without the support of the other.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, hopefully people will get that magic thing to get people to come more often. And hopefully with geocaching as it expands and grows, that will be easier to do. But right now, it's a trip getting anybody to get to stuff like that, even in regular events on a regular basis.
How much Lord of the Rings stuff do you want?
Oh, I'd be there. You know, you throw in Xena and the rest of them, I'm there. I mean, I'll do it.
Chronicles of Narnia, Weta Workshops is 10 minutes from Wellington Airport.
Yeah, see? I would like to see the place where they put Hobbiton and all the rest of it. That'd be awesome.
Hobbiton's way up north, but it's a nice part of the country.
Yeah.
I've never done the full Hobbiton tour. I've driven through the town.
Right.
I know where it is.
Yeah.
Some good old caches up there as well, so...
The problem is... I will go to New Zealand and then never come back. And it's I know that will happen. It's like, okay, I'm home, thanks, and move in. I'll find my little hole in the tree and go there. I'll be perfectly fine. All right, let's move on tonight. Episode 532, Geocaching Streaking. And a random mm-hmm. thought. Yay, streaking. Man, you know, that's really kind of died out.
We're not
over the
talking
years.
About a geocache on the beaches of Florida.
No, because my luck is when somebody streaks, it's going to be somebody that is not on the Swedish bikini team. It's going to be somebody from, you know, down here somewhere that may not have the same aesthetics as one would want.
From the Wisconsin beer drinking cheese eating team.
Exactly.
No offense to any Wisconsin.
No, no offense, no offense. But yeah, that's yeah, but how we
you
get.
Know, you know who you are.
Yeah.
A cousin of mine has a place in Fuerteventura, which is one of the Canary Islands. And although it's a complex of houses. But the beach just past that is clothing optional.
Ah.
And as my mother put it when she stayed there once, she refers to all the Teutonic tigers around the place. And somebody else, there is a geocache just on at the edge of the property, and there's comments about the logs include comments about baboons' bottoms and naked whales.
Yeah, it's not all the wonderful fantasy movie type stuff that we would hope and dream, unfortunately. But yeah, tonight we are going to be talking about geocaching streaking, and I kind of wish that Scott Burks was here, but he is on hiatus, as you know. It is baseball season, and he has children that are in baseball season, which means he is off the grid for a while. And but one thing that he does have going, matter of fact, he mentioned about it last week, is that his streak that he has been keeping for forever is to get at least one first to find a month. And that's been going on for, what, 6-7 years now? Something in that neighborhood?
More. Almost 10 years. Is it 10? Like 11, 112?
Something like that. So
that's 8 months shy of 10 years.
Yeah. And has kept that going. And there are people out there, geocachers, that have absolutely amazing geocaching streaks to the point where how do you do it? How do you keep things going to that point?
Yeah, we have one guy, we have a couple of first to find hounds near us. But one guy particularly has got a first to find every month since he started caching, and that was way, way back.
Yeah.
I don't remember how long he's got it. I've got a good friend of mine who's on something like he had his 1800, had an event to mark 1800 days of geocaching, and had, so he must be coming up to sort of 1900 odd now.
Yeah, he's mad. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know how people do it. That's a determination and a dedication that I can't do that. I mean, I'll give you a hint. Back when a couple of years ago, when they had the 31 days of August, Amy and I were doing it, and by about 20 or so, it's like, this is work. This is work finding a geocache a day and going that way. So I can't imagine thousands.
Pneumonia took me out on that. So actually I was on like day 23 or something. I was literally out in the woods, 104 degrees out and 104 degree temperature.
Yeah.
Okay. I wound up in the hospital with sepsis.
Yeah.
And
solid excuse.
Yeah, I think that one works.
So I wound up missing 4 days.
Yep.
Because I was literally in the hospital.
Yeah, that's a good excuse. Though I do remember that for Amy and I, the second day of it was the day we got married. And
that can cause issues.
She was the one who sat there and said, we are getting the cash, right? And I'm like, okay. So yeah, it's a dedication, but we always will remember that.
Right.
Yeah.
I will say, when I was, because the 31 days thing came out when I was still a relatively new geocacher. And I sort of thought, well, I've got to... There was a couple of challenges that came out at the time. One was get 50 caches a month for 13 months. And that's, so I thought, well, if I do one a day, that's most of the months sort of covered off, so I'm not rushing around like a mad thing at the end.
Right.
And somebody else brought out a 100-day streak challenge. So I thought, well, the 31 will fit nicely into that. It'll kill off almost a third of it.
Yeah.
So I sort of went for it and kept going. Got to day 70, and I just could not find a cache in the dark. I went back the next day, and the damn thing laughed at me. But I just could not find that one in the dark, so I went back home. I was furious. I wasn't pleasant to be around. I was sulking for 3 days. So I thought, I've got to get back on the horse. I've got to do this damn thing. And I need to do it, A, while I was still working part-time, so I had afternoons, and B, while there was still plenty in my own local area to find. So I eventually worked through the 100. Thought, okay, I've done the 100. I've done that one for the local challenge. Let's see how long I can keep this going. And I kept going for a bit, and about 260 odd, it became a bit of a pain.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought, well, I'll keep this going because I'll keep this going for a year because I'll never be able to do it again, sort of thing, given the sort of geographical area I'm in. It's sort of the bottom of the South Island, so I've only got to basically go north if I want to find anything. So I kept it going for a year, and then kept it going a bit further and gave up, I think it was on day 388. Because one, I'd got to the state, I'd failed to find a night cache. I'd got all the way around it, but couldn't find the thing at the very last location. And this was 10:30 at night, and I sort of realized, I've got to do something about this. It's becoming too much of an obsession. The family actually needs to remember what I look like. I'd like to continue to remain married.
There you go.
Yeah, so So I eventually broke it at that point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I admire people who do streaks and keep them going for the thousands, but I couldn't do it. I did long enough to qualify me for 95% of the streak challenges.
There you go.
So.
Wow.
Sort of
until someone puts out a 500 and then someone puts out a 1,000.
They can't anymore. It's banned.
They can't anymore.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's some hugely long numbered ones, but the new challenge restrictions didn't allow a streak of more than a year.
Yeah,
okay,
that's right.
We got some long ones out here, and I'm like, no. The longest streak I've ever done was 41 days, and the longest streak of finding a cache consecutive days was 41 days. The longest streak I've had is 133 days,
yeah.
And that's 133 days of not finding a cache.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when I was doing that, I was actually trying to fill out my 365 calendar days,
right.
And it just happened, you know, I'm trying to get one for each of the calendar days.
Mm-hmm. Yep, good stuff. All right, so let's move on. This is pulled right out of the geocaching blog, and they have a lot of good stuff. So if you get a chance, by all means, make sure you check out the geocaching blog, and they come out pretty frequently, about at least once a week, of different stuff, and some amazing geocaches, by the way, that's around the world that people love talking about. But today, the 10 tips to help maintain your geocaching streak, and again, I would really love to get some input from Scott, because I swear when he got to 100 with that was it. He was like, I'm done. This is over. I am so glad. Mm-hmm. And he's on 112, 113 or whatever.
Something like that now.
So, yeah, once it's in your blood, it is very hard to get out of your blood. Yeah. And, yeah, interesting stuff. So let's kind of go over some of the stuff that they've got on here. They literally say, let's talk about geocaching streaks. A streak is when you log a geocache to attend or attend an event cache every day for an extended period of time. Some geocachers have maintained them for a month, a year, or even longer. Several streak freaks, I kind of like that term, several streak freaks have even maintained them for years. You can track your streak on your profile statistics, but what if weather is terrible? What about the thing they call your life, which does show up once in a while? What if you just want to binge watching movies from your couch with your four cats and a pint of ice cream? Hey, Amy, they're talking about you. The 10 tips will help you plan ahead, stay motivated, and become a streak freak yourself. So first one they have, they've got these cute little things on here. It's know when to hold them. And the cool thing is reserve low difficulty terrain caches located close to your home or work for busy or extreme weather days. Now, I don't know about you fine folks, but as a geocacher for the past 10 years, there's a 10-mile radius around my house that there's nothing. There is nothing.
I would say in Sugar Land, it was the same way. And, you know, I had the whole area cleared out. And literally as new ones, like, would pop in, it's like if I'm not running for an FTF on it, I would leave it.
Yeah.
So that I would have that hold'em situation where I, and in case when August rolls around and I want and I need one or two that are close by, I would have them there. And now here I've kind of avoided some of the caches that are somewhat nearby, you know, in like the Folsom area. So that way I do have a nice set of relatively easy caches that I can go after. But that's one of the rookie mistakes, so to speak, is people immediately clear out yeah. that area, and then they start getting into some of the challenges like the 365, 366 challenges where they gotta get a cache for every day of the year. And whoops, they've cleaned out their area.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it makes it more difficult because they have to travel every day.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I've got ones that are still close to me, but they're sort of up on the ridges, up in the hills. So yes, it may only be 2 miles from my house, but I've got a sort of 40-minute walk uphill, and if it's a howling gale, I'm not going up to the top of Mount Kaukau, thank you.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
And I'll get them sometime, but it doesn't have to be today.
Yeah, and a lot of times now with the August-type situations, and sometimes they do it different times of year with geocaching.com, it's not just a traditional that you have to worry about. It may be an earth cache, it may be an event, it may be a bunch of things that even when you want to clear them out, you might still want not to, because like the nearest earth cache event to me is like 35 miles away, you know, that kind of thing. Yep. So you got to really kind of keep a good variety there.
I've held off on a few just because I don't fancy having to drive for 3 hours to pick up an earth cache.
Yep. Let's see. Number two, know when to fold them. Do not zoom around at 60 miles an hour to grab a cache by 11:59 p.m., endangering others and yourself. It's a hobby, folks. I like putting, when I had my blog and a bunch of other things, that I would speed at great amounts of whatever the speed limit was of getting to the geocache first to find, what have you. Yeah, you got to be careful out there because I don't know if you've noticed, but I've seen a lot more reports of people making that wrong left or right turn because their GPS told them to. So be careful out there, because you really don't, one, you don't want to get the speeding ticket. Two, you don't want to get, you know, into an accident and endanger everybody else, including yourself. Yeah, just be careful out there.
If you can avoid it, you don't be the guy that somebody calls the cops on.
Right.
Prowling around and acting suspiciously at night.
Exactly. Exactly. So just be careful out there.
Scott, we're not talking about you at all, are we?
Not at all. He is a legend as in his own right. Let's see. Number three, have reservations. When meeting friends, suggest restaurants or places near caches you need to find. They'll never know.
They will.
Yeah.
They'll mock you unmercifully, but hopefully they don't mind too much.
I've even suggested ones for a date night with the wife.
Uh-huh.
And the wife that doesn't geocache.
Right. And so. The wife that I'm no longer married to had a special eye-rolling look that where she's like, well, I'm going to go into this particular store for a little while. Okay, honey, I'll be in the car. And she'd roll her eyes and know what that meant. So, yeah.
Oh, I've been there.
Yeah, I've done the classic of, right, we want to do this. Where are we meeting back and when?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so... the other thing is, if you're planning to cache after you've been, before or after a restaurant, keep a keep your all your work clothes. Make sure you've got a decent pair of trainers or something in the car, because there's going to be nothing worse than turning up to that fancy restaurant in a wrecked outfit because you've fallen in a ditch or whatever.
Or work. Or work. Yeah. Yes. Then they're done that. My one boss literally would just shake his head because from the knees down is either full of burrs or dirt or wet or whatever, and I'm just like, don't even ask.
I keep a spare t-shirt and different shoes in there, but I have had the occasion of having some dirty trousers going back into work because I don't keep a spare pair of trousers in the car.
No, I've had some soakers, so yeah, it makes it fun. Number four, this is a good tip, Midnight Madness. If you're one of your things, if you're doing daily goals for your geocaches, find a cache around 11:30 p.m. and then find another one a little bit after 12 o'clock a.m. for the next day. You're in the same spurt. You don't have to go out twice.
Yep.
You just have to watch what you're doing. Yeah, you got to watch. Be careful where you go geocaching, I guess, is the best way to do that. You don't want to alert security or law enforcement or the cranky neighbor who really watches the neighborhood kind of thing. So keep an eye out.
While doing this, I went out for one at 11:30, and it was in a gas station parking lot and lamppost cache. And I park in front of the lamppost, and there's a car, and there's a truck parked behind me, just sitting there, and wouldn't leave. At about 11:58, I got out of the vehicle, lifted the skirt. It's like, I'm signing this thing. If it gets muggled, it gets muggled.
Right. Yeah, that happens. I mean, there's been times when I pulled up to a first to find at 11:30 at night with two police cars sitting 20 feet off from the geocache. I just walked up nicely, shallantly, so that I didn't look threatening and said, guys, I'm a geocacher. This is what I'm going to do. And they actually helped me find the geocache. So, yeah.
I've never done the 11:30, 12:01, partly because I hate night caching, and also because I just know I'm a lark, not a night owl. If I'm out caching after midnight and I have work the next day, I'm going to be an absolute zombie. So I sort of pull the pin on a couple of things. I know people who can pull the sort of late night sets and then rock up at 8 o'clock in the morning and be bright and alert and all the rest. I am not one of them.
When I was much younger, like 10 years ago, that was not as much of a big deal. Now, that puppy better be on my front doorstep, glowing with a neon light in front of it, and so that I can walk over, sign it, and go back. Otherwise, it's like, maybe not so much anymore. Let's see. Number five, Elementary, my dear Watson. And I think Mr. Chad's a good one for this one. Pre-solve coordinates for mystery and puzzle caches.
I might have 371 pre-solved ones for Cincinnati for Geo Woodstock. I don't think I'll get all of them.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good try. That's a good try.
I haven't looked at the Yorkshire Mega and Pirate Mania that I'm going to be at in July, August yet. I don't know what's coming out, and unless it's a stonkingly good piece of geo art, I know I won't get time to get all around it because I'm going to be visiting friends and rallies. But yes, for events normally I try and get as much as I can pre-solved in the area.
Yeah.
And InfoParrot also mentioned on here that multis, which, yes, especially with Google Street View, quite often you can pre-solve the multis. Or with some of the information on there, you can pre-solve those. But you can also pre-solve some where I goes, such as reverse where I goes.
Oh, really? Very nice.
Yes. There might even be a German website to do it for you.
I'm not getting into that though for a couple of reasons, but there's earth caches are good, and especially if you've got the, I mean, it's even things if you go to an earth, you get an earth cache, you find the information either online or by visiting the site. And I might have visited the site, got the information, taken the photograph, but not sent the information through and held off logging it, because I want to make sure I've got that approval from the cache owner that I can log it.
Ah.
And or if you've worked out the multi and worked out where the final is, I mean, I do that quite often on holiday. Visit the location, work out how many people called Jones are on that war memorial or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Work out where the final is, and then come back another day because it's not the direction we happen to be heading at that particular time.
Oh yeah.
But you've got the, it's effectively usually turns them into fairly easy traditionals once you've done all the pre-work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. So, and I'm gonna on the reverse where I go, if you're doing it smart, it's not hard to do it anyways. You should be able to do it with a maximum of three, what do you call it? The captures of your the information distances on really? The reverse where I goes.
All right, good to know.
So yeah, that plus a little bit of math,
and you see, that's what blows
me
apart.
You should be able to get the final coordinates.
That's what blows me apart. That's why I take
there's
teachers with me that go through the either professors or math teachers. I usually take them with me, and we figure stuff out beforehand because it's like. No, math is not my forte, and they know it. And some of these, I will not be able to figure out that algorithm / formula / whatever it is because it's not in my DNA.
Well, there's this little app called GCC that's out there. All you need to do is capture the distance at three different points. Write down what those coordinates are. Pop those three coordinates in there, and it will give you where the final is.
Wow. See, yeah, now CGCC is awesome, especially if you're talking about any kind of cryptology or algorithms or breaking down color code number systems, anything that deals with figuring those out. It is an awesome app. It's free. Get it on the out of the App Store or off of actually, I don't think it's on app, right? It's on Android. It's not on app.
If it's on Android, I don't know if it's on iOS or not.
Right, but excellent.
You'd have to ask the Scoutmaster.
Yes. All right, let's move on to the hostess with the mostest. Consider hosting a monthly event cache or CETO. Keep in mind that creating daily events just to bulk up your statistic is frowned upon. But I know a lot of people that do weekend geocache events. They just get together every week. So yeah. good way to keep a streak going.
Yeah, I host a sort of pop-up event every couple of times a year, and somebody else holds a similar pop-up event. So there's one usually every couple of months.
Yeah. Yep. Good way to go. Number seven, get physical. Incorporating geocaching into your fitness plan and bike, jog, or walk to caches. As your streak continues, your distance will increase and your waistline will hopefully decrease. Hopefully is a great word. So, yeah, absolutely. It's definitely part of the, as your circle expands of not having geocaches, yeah, you definitely are going to end up going farther and farther. I have talked to several different people where they will discuss issues with bikes, especially if you're on a trail, when it comes to geocaching, because, you know, you get off your bike, you get on your bike, you go another 500 feet, you go and repeat the process and do that. So, you know, it's your whatever floats your boat and you like doing it, go for it. It's awesome and a great way to help with your health. So that's awesome. Number eight, autumn is awesome. Start a 365-day challenge in the fall to get the worst weather out of the way while you're still fresh. Great tip. The flip side, your end of your streak will be in the most glorious of weather. And don't forget about the existence of Leap Day. The next one is February 29th, 2020. And I can't tell you how many people that it's like, what do you mean Leap Day was this year? So, yes.
So I think in some parts of the country, it'd be summer is super.
Yes. Yes.
You know, get that summer months out of the way.
Yeah, in certain states, I'm thinking it may not be
where you're melting?
Much. Yes. Or freezing.
Right.
Yeah, I made sure I helped when it was the last leap day. I made sure I held an event so that as many people as possible could actually get that day as off their radar.
Yep. Number nine, ice baby in the winter. Make sure caches have the available during winter attribute. Really plan those out, because if you're in an area that you're used to having ice and snow and winter type things, you're more used to it. If you are in an area like where I'm at, where the entire town shuts down on the threat of snow, you really got to plan well when it comes to bad weather. They'll go out in a hurricane without blinking an eye, but if there is a threat of a snowflake, they will run away screaming. So it's one of those type situations.
Depends how much rain we're getting.
Yes, everybody's got their little thing with that.
I got to drive 20 miles to get to it during the winter.
And finally, number 10, first is the worst.
Oh, what a cute photo.
That is a great photo. Leave the first to find bragging rights to others during your streak. You got to stay focused. Yeah, you know, it's all part of the fun with that. You know, first to finds is great. And first to find hounds are a different breed of geocacher. And even though, like, you get somebody like Scott where he's got to get a first to find once a month and that, there are differences between that and first to find hounds where it doesn't matter how many and where they're placed and how far you have to drive, you're going to get them all. So it's they have that mentality.
I know somebody whose wife says he'll get up at sort of 3 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
He's just had that ping.
Yes. And you're gone. I may have done that once or twice or so. So yeah, the different breed.
I'm going to bed a couple of times to go and get one, but I'm not about to go. There's one that's really annoying me. I was just idly skimming over the map in the area, just and there's a virtual that had popped up. If I could drive straight to it, it's probably about an hour's drive. But it's about three quarters of an hour's drive, and then a couple of hours walk or mountain bike off, because it's on the top of a hill and it's basically in the middle of nowhere. So the first to find hasn't gone on that one, and I'm quite happy to leave it. Someone else can have it.
There you go. Yeah, for us, if you want a first find not to be found right away, just make it anything but a traditional. If you make it a puzzle cache or a multi-cache or whatever, it'll sit there for at least a day or two before somebody goes after it, at least in our part of the country.
So I had to look up my good buddy Texas Rider's number of first to finds. He's up to 3,465 FTFs.
I'll see if I can find... There's something on Project GC on where to find the top five. No. Our top FTF streaks months under find stuff. Let's see if I can bring that up.
Yep, and I think our random thought, I'm going to pass it off to you fine folks, and we'll discuss it next week, because I think this will actually get into some stuff. So I'm going to, before Sarah and Chad sum up here, let me throw the random thought at you, and then write back to us either at GCPC mailbag and go that way, or through our website. Just go onto our main website and you can write to us that way. The random thoughts going to be discussing will be caches with no recent finds. And what basically what that means is the person that this came out of the forum stated that he was trying to make a PQ list for traditional caches within 50 miles of their house and have not been logged in more than 2 years. And how do you do that? So that's what we're going to talk about next week.
Okay.
So we can do that. So, Sarah, you were saying before on your part there.
I'm just trying to see how long the person I know has got it, got his first to find hound streak. There's a couple of them. Come on, Project GC. It's not coming up. That's totally wrong.
I hate when that happens.
Heatrees has got a lot. Matt, you know, the most first to find month I got up to was 5 in a row, but I was working part time at that point.
Yep. But streaks are awesome. I mean, streaks are very cool to get into, but it's going to take some dedication. It's going to take some time to go at it, and there are going to be times you just aren't going to want to go out. And that's just how it is.
And it takes thought and it takes planning.
Yes.
And at times it takes restraint. Hey, there's six along this path. Great. I'll get one. And I'll come back.
Go for it
when you're still either a relatively new cacher, so you've got lots in your, or you've just moved, so you're in a new area and you haven't cleared it out yet.
Yeah, when you got the geocaching fever and you just, you know, you want to get that geocache on the way to work, during your lunch hour at work, on the way back home from work, and then get some stuff after that. When you're at that fevered pitch, that obsession, and we all get there, that's the time you want to do this kind of stuff. Because if you're in it for X number of years down the road, not so much. I mean, for not everybody, I can't talk for everybody, but for a large amount of people, you kind of lose that and you start going, you know what, quality over quantity is an awesome thing, and you start going that route, that's when it starts going that way. Yeah. So
I really enjoyed my just over a year streak. I had a blast doing it, but I will say I was really glad when it finished and I got my life back.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to have to dash because I need to be somewhere else.
All right.
In 2 minutes.
Well, thanks, Sarah. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Have a great weekend and see you all next week.
All right. Thanks, Sarah.
All right. See you, Sarah.
Yep.
Yeah. I will not be doing a 1 year FTF or not FTF, 1 year streak, fine streak until I retire.
Yeah. I think that would be it.
Once I retire, a lot more time on my hand.
Yes.
Than I would be willing to tackle that.
Yeah. I think the part that gets with me, and a lot of geocachers, because I know a lot of geocachers that start tapering off, because usually the mean for geocachers gets to about 60 or so in age, where things either, you're either still in it, kind of, or not. And for me, it's either age or health and those kind of things. So as you get older doing it, it does make it a lot more difficult to get out and do that, because your body kind of goes, no. For a lot of things. I mean, you're not climbing trees. You're not climbing up and down ditches and hollers or what have you. So do it while you're young, because that's the way to do it.
I met, you know, several years ago, I would be much more willing to immediately climb that tree. And I'm like, you know, my body's breaking down, my knee's giving out, and I'm like, maybe not.
Yeah, and I'm at the point now where, you know, I used to take Amanda. She was, I don't know, 10, 11. So a lot of the stuff she would love to do and get into it. And it's like, okay, can I afford going to the hospital if something bad happens? That kind of thing. But she's too old for it now. You know, she's in her 20s now. So it's one of those things where the interest isn't there for her. So, yeah, it's you get it while you can.
Yeah. My 16-year-old basically gave it up about 4 years ago when he was 12.
And, yeah.
And it's like,
what are you going to do?
Can't get it back.
It's like, boys or girls become a factor, and it's just, it's over. Forget it.
now if I were on a trip and I stop, he's like, Dad, I'm getting a geocache. roll my eyes. And
yeah. Well, I used to be able to bribe with ice cream or something, and I can't even do that anymore. So it's like, there.
Well, I used to be able to bribe with a tree climb. You know, it's like, okay, there's a geocache with a tree climb.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, you know, yeah. That's how it is. Like, all right. All right, good stuff. Well, tonight we had a good time, and we hope you guys did too. Good discussion about geocaching streaking. If you want to do the other kind, just don't be where you can get photographed. I'm just saying. So good stuff. Want to thank Sarah and want to thank Chad for all the contribution and everything they do on a week-to-week basis. We want to thank you fine folks for stopping on by to give us a listen or give us a watch with the Geocaching Podcast. We greatly appreciate it. I have no music tonight, so I'm just going to read what we have, and then we will close out from there. And again, thank you for stopping on by. We really do appreciate it. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Hard Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Chad Courtney, and Sarah T.S. The show is copyright 2018 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.